Okay, so next on stage, we take a look at foreign exchange, the future of currency, and overall trade today in 2017. We're taking into consideration the impact of Trump, foreign affairs, cryptocurrencies, Brexit, and more. Will there ever be an optimal currency area? Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in giving a warm welcome to David Birch in conversation with co-founder and CEO at Ebury, Salvador Garcia, and co-founder and CEO at Currency Cloud, Mike Lavin.
Going to talk about? I forgot.
Currency.
It's all coming back to me now, currency. Right, so we're going to spend the next few minutes talking about currency and how these guys are going to make a living in the future. Because I think most people in the audience realize that in 2 or 3 years' time, everybody's going to be using Bitcoin, so nobody's going to make a living out of pounds and euros and all those old legacy currencies. So how are you guys going to make a living when everybody's using Bitcoin and Ethereum and stuff? We don't need you guys anymore, right?
Should I start? Well, it won't be any less of a struggle than it is now, Dave. I've made a... If you look at the world's central banks, and to see if you think that all the borders are going to fall away and we're all going to be using the same currency without friction...
That's what the Bitcoin guys told me.
That's what the Bitcoin guys are thinking, but I think that theirs is a utopia that in the next few years isn't going to be there. I think that the idea of taking friction out of how value moves is really important, but that we'll all be using Bitcoin in the future is, or anything, or Ethereum, or anything that's similar to that, is no different than the idea that we'd all be speaking Esperanto. It's really the right idea. There's a whole set of friction that needs to go away. But let's get beyond Bitcoin, because that often sidetracks the discussion. There will be other pieces of value that will have to move from an electronic wallet in Sweden to an electronic wallet in Tanzania. And we'll take the friction out of all of those, but I don't believe that the currencies themselves, which arise from national borders and from Adam Smith and economics that have been placed for a couple of centuries, solidified by central banks, I don't believe that infrastructure is disappearing anytime soon, though technology may take the friction out of how things move. That the infrastructure itself will go away, I don't believe.
But how can you reduce friction if you're using that same legacy infrastructure?
But where I think that we need to watch for in the future is that with new technology, the cost of running currencies and running exchanges and all of that is certainly going down. That's something that is happening. But what we don't know, that new capability, what is going to be used for. So I think that we may see new currencies arising, but whether those currencies are coming from different countries or from different sectors or the purpose that they are going to be used for is very difficult to predict. But something that we know for sure is that the cost of doing that is going to be lower. And also for me, something very important, because we are always thinking on data. I think that the value of that is not only that the cost is going down, it's also that the value can increase way more. So you can use currency to store data. The reason that you don't have more data linked to the currency now is because of the currency we are using, but you can use other currencies where you have full data, and that can be very valuable. So.
Is this what you meant about exchanging things between wallets that aren't... So currencies begin to mean more than money?
It could be more than money, but I think one thing we need to look at is where there will be change. So remember, in terms of currencies between Europe and the U.S., between the U.S. and the U.K., and a series of other markets, there's massive amounts of liquidity. So there's so much liquidity, there's no need for friction, and costs are driven to nothing. But if you want to send money from South Africa to Thailand, or from Kenya to Nigeria, or any other one of those corridors that are not an old-style north-south corridor, I think the world doesn't have a solution for you right now.
Yeah, but
and I think and we could see a whole series of other transfer mechanisms growing up. And then when in these less liquid markets where you need, the currency markets are based on massive amounts of liquidity, where you have low liquidity but a real need, there's going to be another solution.
And that solution could be things like Bitcoin and Ethereum.
It could be Bitcoin, it could be Ethereum, it could be, you need some other way to, if you want to send money from Kenya to Nigeria, the idea that you're going to take it to London, exchange it and send it back to Nigeria and do a synthetic exchange between four different pairs doesn't make any sense. The world is going to have a better way to shift around money from places that are increasingly working together. We do it on a north-south basis in the way that many things have worked on a north-south basis. I think there's a lot of east-west things that are going to happen where I think you're absolutely right, whether it's Bitcoin or Ethereum or something we haven't even thought of, but there's no channel right now to do those effectively, and I think we're going to see some things happen there.
So can I ask you, if we pursue that sort of technological thinking for a moment, it seems to me that the new, you know, one of the key aspects of the new technologies, well, actually, there are sort of two key aspects of the new technologies. I think one is there's a kind of transparency to them, which we didn't have before. You can see where the money's moving and who it's moving to, which I think is quite interesting. But the other thing is the entry barrier is lowered. There's a decentralizing nature to these new technologies. So if I wanted to create a new currency because I'm dissatisfied with the US dollar, it's going to be much easier for me to do that in the future. And you can see communities of people springing up that begin to use these other currencies. So don't you feel that we're looking at a world where there are more currencies in the future? We're not going to have a world currency. We're not even going to have a euro. But we're going to have lots more currencies, and that's great news for you guys.
Well, whether we are going to have the euro or not, that's for
well,
another
euro
conversation.
Is a temporary thing,
but no, I fully agree. Technology, the pace of change in that sense, we can see that is accelerating. You can see that a lower cost to set up your own currency, to run your own currency, means that you can do things in the future that you cannot do now or you couldn't do before. Which countries, which companies, which sectors are going to leverage that capability to create a different form to store wealth? It's yet to be seen, but certainly the possibility is there and it's probably something that lies ahead.
Well, look, if we generalize that discussion to draw on your experience, let's imagine that what I've just said is true, right? So we have new technology coming along, which makes it easier for people to create currencies. So in my new book, did I mention I have a new book coming out?
Oh, you have a new book.
In my new book. So I put these in five categories, and I'm curious about your opinion. I call them the five C's. So we can see central banks. Remember, money right now isn't created by central banks. Money's created by retail banks, commercial banks. But we could see central banks taking over and issuing their own digital currencies. We could see commercial banks continuing to do it the way they do now. And remember, we've already had the first set of experiments in that respect with things like Mondex and Visa Cash and so on. Years ago, we had those experiments. We could see companies beginning to issue their own money. I mean, why not have Facebook dollars or IBM dollars or Microsoft dollars? We can see cryptography doing it, as we've just discussed with Bitcoin and Ethereum. Or we could see communities issuing their own. You could imagine an Islamic currency for the Islamic diaspora, for example, or a London currency, or charity currencies. So do you feel that things are going to stay the same, where money is issued by commercial banks and it's fiat currency, or do you think money's going to change and some of those other issuers will come into play?
So,
conservative are you?
So, if you go into a restaurant in China and there's a QR code on the table, and you scan the QR code into your phone, and it pops up a menu, and you choose off the menu on your phone, and some dishes arrive, and then the bill arrives, and there's a discount on the bill to the extent that you share your geolocation, the question becomes, what are you paying with? So that what you're paying with is some mix of currency and mix of information. So to the extent, and you, of course, in his previous book, which you should all read if you haven't, he also wrote pretty elegantly about where that personal data becomes monetized. And I think that you see that all the time. Whether we like that or not is another story, and whether our privacy is being invaded because of that, and whether our geolocation as a piece of value that can then be traded is something that we agree with is a question that's really worth exploring. But suddenly our geolocation and our identity becomes part of paying a bill. So I think, to go back to your point, Dave, is that a currency that's being issued by the company? Is there an exchange for that? So firms like ourselves, which help to try and reduce the friction as you're going from one means of exchange to another, I think there's not going to be any global sense of stored value. And to go back, whether it's from central banks to companies or from commercial banks to companies or to communities, there'll always be friction. So you'll need people to take the friction out. But I think that if you go back to the restaurant issue, you're seeing lots of different examples. It might be called a discount. You know, I get a discount if I'm willing to share information. That's another way of ascribing value to something else in the transaction. And I think you see more and more of that. And then you're going to need a way to store that information in a way to transition.
The last time I went to a mall in Beijing to have some lunch, they all have their own mall cards. I mean, you take your Chinese currency and you exchange it for mall currency. And the mall currency is what you use to buy your lunch with. Nobody has POS terminals, nobody has cash registers. They just have the little things you tap the mall cards onto. If that is a vision of the future, then the individual currencies won't be a concern for people, right? Because I won't even know what currency I'm paying with. My phone is connected to AI supercomputers, and they'll be deciding what's the best currency. Maybe people won't even see these currencies anymore.
Yeah, that's probably what we were saying before. That new type of currencies allow you to do newer things, better things, different things. And if you think of data, what we are seeing right now is a lot of companies that have business models that are around capturing data. Data is valuable, and you can have propositions that allows you to capture that data and monetize that data in the future. But you see very, very few situations where you have people monetizing their own data. As Mike was saying, that you are paying with a combination of currency and your own information, because you are giving that information and that gives you a discount. So I think that what we will see more of is that everyone will understand the value of data. Not only the companies that will try to capture the data, but also the companies and consumers that know that their data is theirs. And if they want to share it, that has a value, and they want to get paid because of that. And the currency can be restored to that value.
I think I was pushing a little harder with that question, though. So I'm saying, right now, if I want to exchange pounds for dollars, right, I happen to use TransferWise, and I send money to America that way. And it's me that's choosing. But in the future, I'll be in my Apple Messenger, right? And so in my Apple FaceTime or whatever, I'll say, we'll send $1,000 to Mike. And it won't be me who's deciding which currencies that goes through or how it works out. It will be my phone that's connected to some AI that's connected. So the nature of currency exchange is just not going to be the same in the future.
Yeah, but I fully agree with that. But probably whoever you are using there to make that transaction happen, the least valuable aspect is the currency conversion, and the most valuable aspect is the management of the data and the handling of the data.
And that fits in with the trends that the payments guys are looking at, because as the payments guys see the fees on payments asymptotic to zero, they're also looking to value-added services from this data. If the data actually becomes part of the currency itself, that really changes the dynamics of the sector.
So where there's massive liquidity between the euro and the dollar and massive liquidity markets, friction goes down dramatically and there is no money to be made, or the consumer shouldn't really be paying very much, no matter what you see from moving a euro to a dollar or a euro to a pound.
Right, right.
There's just the whether it's making the payment or changing the money, there's a small cost to doing that in the wholesale markets, and ultimately all of the layers of infrastructure that we have taken away by people like ourselves, by TransferWise, will cut out all of those costs and make that more and more efficient. So the costs to individuals will start to be driven to near zero. Then what happens is that there's still a cost and the system still has to run. The data becomes important. But I think one of the things that we're not talking about is it's a very different world for a small business or even a medium to a large business than it is for an individual. I think sending 100 euro to your mom in the Philippines is something that should be free and will be. But sending 20,000 euro to a manufacturer in Thailand for bicycle parts is something that carries with it a whole different set of data requirements and consequently a whole set of compliance and regulatory requirements that require a very different regime. I think we often look at this problem and look at it in terms of the consumer, and there is no reason for small consumer transactions, for the costs and all of that to go away. Businesses have another
issue. Right. But that data is just as valuable. So if I'm sending 20,000 euros to a supplier in Germany, that data is just as valuable to people who are in the supply chain financing business and the small business loans and so on. That data is still even more valuable than sending money to the Philippines.
At Dibury, we specialize exactly in those companies. So we focus on more complex situations where it's not just moving money from one place to another. It's the compliance aspect involved in it, the credit risk understanding, the underwriting of the client, and bringing more value through more products to that client. And there, what is key in our roadmap is data. Is data to understand what every client will demand from you.
Right. Am I right in guessing that the regulatory and compliance costs are much more than the technology costs?
On a risk-adjusted basis, for sure.
Right, that's true. So if we can find ways to move money around, let's say if we can find ways to move currency around, and that currency is much a wider definition of currency than we have now, are you going to be the guys that do this, or are new intermediaries going to come into the business? People who perhaps understand more about data analysis and big data and cloud and this kind of thing.
So remember, the cost of moving money now is not the cost of exchange and payment, it's the cost of compliance and regulation. And so all of the technology solutions that we're talking about are driving down the frictional cost of payment and exchange, but the frictional cost of compliance only continues to go up.
Right.
And every time, as we've had whatever kind of terrorist incident you have, dials up the scrutiny that national regulators put, whether it's rightly or wrongly, on how money moves and where it goes. So if you were to ask, so I think though technology is driving down the frictional cost of the actual transactions themselves, and there are regulatory solutions that are RegTech and things like that that are helping us with identity management and driving that down. That lags way behind the actual transactional costs.
But the constraint on the business going forward, even if we do start trading other kinds of currencies, is still that regulatory stuff.
It's compliance.
If we come up with better technology solutions, I mean, whether it's Bitcoin or anything else, that actually doesn't make much difference to the overall cost base, because that's not where the costs are.
The costs are in, remember, but what is, in a sense, compliance is knowing who's on both sides, is identity, why don't you try and deal with the identity problem of identifying small Chinese businesses in China. How are you going to do that if you're an American payment service provider? So that's a frictional cost that none of the things we're talking about is making go away. And where I see the application of technology, whether it's AI or the integration of social media, where there's massive room to grow to actually bring about this world where things move down frictionally, is in all of these things having to do with individual and business identity that moves across, moves across scripts, moves across. And whether it's my personal identity that's being traded or euros, it's still the same frictional issue. I need to know who's on either side. And I don't see that requirement being relaxed in any way. I see it only being dialed up.
So a message for the fintechs out here then is, if they're going to create new products and services which are really going to help in the currency business, to be honest, they're better off dealing with these problems of identity, trust, reputation, rather than trying to make pipes which are marginally more efficient. And actually, by the way, I read this morning that if you want to send $4 by Bitcoin, it costs $4 at the moment. It's actually cheaper to send the money using TransferWise. So it's not really making the impact they would have hoped. But for the guys out here, the innovators out here, looking forward, that's the message, right?
Yeah, for me the message is that over time, fractional costs go down. and if margins will erode and you will have tighter prices all over. But as things change, you have more and more opportunity coming in. And as entrepreneurs and people that are thinking of ideas or starting up companies, I think that there's a huge opportunity around data. I think that for us, if you think of the consumer problem, how data can help is one area. You look at businesses and companies that have more complex needs, data is huge. And that's why for us, data sits at the center of the company. Not only to understand our clients better and their propensity to buy different products, but also for us to make our products better. That's
so let me give you a concrete example that I'm curious about. So on the odd occasions when British Airways flies planes from London down to Spain, if you have a cup of coffee on board, you can now choose to buy it using your credit card, pounds, dollars, euros, whatever, or you can use your airline points to buy it. So how come I can't trade airline points on Currency Cloud? What has to happen to bring these currencies, these data-rich currencies, into that space?
So there are alternative currencies. Remember, there's a currency in mobile minutes that are traded globally. I don't know about airline points, but airline points are traded. And there's now a series of intermediaries who actually work in the mobile minute trading market, and there are intermediaries who work in the airline market as well. So I think it's a pretty good question. Is that a currency or not? I don't know. And on those low-value transactions, there's no reason why you might get other means of exchange to make that done. Just to follow up on your previous question, I think that where identity touches the financial system is by no means thought through. When it gets to business, there's massive areas to go and make that more frictionless. When it moves across languages and currencies, it's not good enough. It's not bad, but that's where you can start to take massive costs out for business in terms of, and still, the regulatory and compliance burden will never go away. It'll never go away, and we have to judge it and work with it all the time. But that really is a data requirement, and managing and understanding that data is where there's massive improvement can be done.
Yeah, no, I mean, we don't want it to go away.
We don't want it to go away.
Because we live in a society, and we want rules. We don't want those. But we want them to be more efficient. We want them to be effective, but at much lower cost. And all I'm saying is, for the fintech entrepreneurs out here, if they're looking to make a big splash in your business, then they should look at KYC, AML, CTF, PEP, not can we do this 1% cheaper by using Ripple instead of using US dollars.
I think there's no room for margin improvement in the major liquidity currencies. I think there's massive room for friction removal and margin improvement in all of the things having to do with identity, and to go back to Salvador's point, in the efficient use of how data interacts with those financial transactions.
And for instance, you think of compliance. Now you have a lot of companies that are doing very interesting stuff. So you have a compliance tech, a compliance stack that is being defined. The companies that I find more interesting are the ones that are doing a more clever use of data.
Right. And that's the message we want to leave the audience with.
Right.
Okay, well listen, guys, thank you very much for taking part in the discussion. I just want to make it clear to the audience, these guys did not know what questions I was going to ask them, because I'm sure, like me, these are smart guys, and like me, you wanted to know what they really think about these things. You don't want some sort of corporate PR script thing. You want to know what smart guys really think about the topic. I want you to take three things away from that discussion. One, if you're looking for innovation in this space, trying to send money a little bit more cheaply doesn't help. The innovation has to come around identity, trust, reputation. Secondly, the future of currency exchange is about the exchange of data as much as it is about the exchange of the underlying value. And thirdly, I mean, air miles notwithstanding, I want you to think about currencies as like loyalty points, but with a standing army. And that will give you like a much better picture of what the future is going to look like. Please join me in thanking the speakers.
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks very much, guys. That was great. Thank you very much for being over.